Weird in my headphones. Earphones, though. All right, that's good enough. So that means we can start now if you want to. Let's hit the button.
Welcome to the Rebel Alliance Briefing. Please visit our website, https://rabr.kaileJohnson.us. There you can find links to send us feedback, connect to us on social media, or instructions on how to load the podcast onto your device. I'm Kyle John Johansson. This is Andrew Scott Sutton and Rick Ross Bosley. It's time to talk Star Wars.
Yes, we don't have Scott here. He's without a Disney Plus subscription, so he hasn't even seen the show yet. So today we're going to be reviewing Star Wars Skeleton Crew episode, and they marked them one of one, so it almost makes you feel like they're planning on a second season, because they've got the season number in there for the episode too. Season one, episode one is what it's listed as. So we're gonna, yeah, it could be. Well, I mean, let's hope. I'm getting tired of this one season stuff, but so first we're gonna review a little bit. We're gonna obviously discuss. We're gonna ask for your feedback a couple times, and then we're just gonna kind of throw out our thoughts about what we thought of the episode. Hopefully you guys will like it and send us some feedback about it. Hopefully we've got a bunch of new followers that are listening fresh with this show. So let's go with feedback. Feedback at kylejohansson.us is our main email address. You can also go to the link on the website, which you'll see here. If you're watching the video, you'll see it on the bottom of the screen right about here, along the bottom where the microphone is right there. You'll see it there. And we have a form over there that says feedback, and it goes to that same email address. We're on X/Twitter. We're called @ @Super_Duper_Pod. We're on Blue Sky @ Rebel Alliance Briefing Room, all one word. And of course, YouTube. We've got audio and video episodes of each recent episode listed there, so you can comment on that. So let's get into it here. The director, and I think this guy is he's the director, but he's also the creator of the show, David Lowery, the writer. There's two writers, seems like these 2 weeks. It's Christopher Ford and John Watts. If you remember John Watts, he worked for Amblin Studios for a while. And a lot of people are kind of thinking that this is more of an Amblin kind of picture. It's more of a fun, kid-friendly kind of picture. You know, like, think about E.T. and those kind of movies.
Well, I can tell you from that, like, opening scene, it was like the E.T. subdivision. You know,
almost,
where the kid runs out, like, and then you see the hill go down. That's, like, totally an E.T., like.
It's pretty close to it.
It's a futuristic version of it.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
I thought of that one. I was like, that's E.T., that's E.T.
Yeah. I like how they got the rail in the middle of the road where the cars.
Yeah.
So this episode originally aired on December 2nd, along with episode 2 that we're going to talk about later. This first episode was 49 minutes long, and this takes place 9 after the Battle of Yavin. So nine years after the first Death Star has exploded. We have a lot of shows that we've been watching that are during this time, you know. So, again, and this episode title was This Could Be a Real Adventure. Let me go through the cast here a little bit. We've got Wim's dad. His name is Wendell on the show, and his real name is Tundi Apami. I'm not going to try even to pretend I know how to say it. Then there's the older girl. Her name's Fern. At least I think she's older. Ryan Kira Armstrong. Let's see. Wim is Ravi Cabot Connors. Conyers. Yeah, that's it. Let's the robot with the crazy little mouse coming out the eyeball. His name is SM33. That's played by Nick Frost. KB, which is the girl that has the Geordi visor thing going on.
Yeah, I was going to say played by
Kyrena Catcher is her name. And then we've got Jodna Nawid, and that is played by Jude Law. He's our mystery character at the end of episode 2. And there's a bunch of pirates here that we're not going to understand who they are anyway. Neil, the elephant looking guy. Neil is Robert Timothy Smith. It's actually a real person. It's not CGI. Yeah. They actually put him in a costume. And Shellet was played by Dale Scholes. I can't remember exactly who Shellet is. I think it's one of the teachers or something. Let's pull up and see.
I don't know who that is either. It's not one of the pirate. Who's the bad guy pirate? Like the, I don't want to give it away. It's a spoiler, I guess. But
yeah, the wolf guy. Let's just say.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking.
I don't know. It doesn't. I don't have. It's no
information. Actually, hold on for a second. I'll find out. Because the captain's name is Silvio or Sylvia or something.
Silvio, yeah. That's part of the problem here. Is my listing shows the people's pictures, doesn't show the character's picture.
Yeah, I'm at the scene where he comes. Brutus. That's the guy. The wolf's guy's name is Brutus.
Right. And he's not listed.
Really?
Oh, I mean, I got this from IMDb, and he's not listed as.
Is that guy one of the ones that's
Dominic Burgess? Maybe
at the planet, and when they're at the restaurant with the bar when they get something to eat, maybe.
Well. No, he's at the beginning too. The first scene in the episode.
I'm thinking the guy that you don't know, that Chateau, was it Chateau or not Chateau?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a female actress, so it says Dale, but it's a female.
Maybe she's the one that's at the bar dancing around like.
Could be the
two girls.
Could be. I don't know why it's not showing me, but we'll see. Brutus, Captain Silvio. I think the Brutus guy is, his name might be Dominic Burgess. I don't. Let's click him and just so we can verify if it has a name. And now there's no name listed here either.
Well, they're just getting started.
Wonder if that means he's a generated character, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, that could be.
And it could be, but all right. So that's the cast and crew. So what that means is it's time to pull up your chair and grab a beverage and join us in the Rebel Alliance briefing room. No, this one. Applause! Yay!
And we are not sponsored.
No, we'd like to be sponsored for real.
Just saying.
Yeah, I got mine, but mine's just water.
Sure, everything's just water. It just has flavorings added to it.
Right, free tap water. all right, so this episode was interesting too because it had an opening crawl. None of the other episodes seem to have one. Well, at least as far as we've seen.
Yep.
But the opening crawl came out and said, "Since the fall of the Empire, the New Republic has maintained order. and yet remote hyperspace routes are increasingly plagued by piracy. These pirates boldly brand their armored hulls as a sign to all ships. And I think it means they typed or put the letters surrender or die on there. They get out their spray paint cans and spray on there, you know.
They tag it. They're taggers.
Yeah. Yeah. So right away, that kind of tells us that this show is going to be a lot about pirates. Space pirates, right?
Our pirates. Exactly. Oh, I need to change my background to that. What am I thinking?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I'm not going to.
All right. So the episode begins in a landscape of a battered freighter passing a distant planet. The freighter is ran by a larger pirate frigate, which they some little tubes shoot out, and they start, you know, basically boarding, drilling holes on the side of it so they can board the ship. It looks like it's kind of aggressive, I thought. Four large drills connected by tubes, allowing people to board aboard the ship. The crew take up a position near where the drills are breaking in, while the pirates charge through the tubes. The crew exchanges fire with the pirates, and several are taken down, and the crew is outmanned and outgunned by the pirates. A gun turret also takes fire at the docking tubes, knocking out several of the tubes. I think at least one of them is still connected after the gunship, because the pirates go out on a grappling line and blow up the gun turret with explosives. Yeah,
that was pretty cool. They had like spacesuits and they like rappelled over and like put these grenades on it.
Exactly. It was kind of, I don't know. Well, I mean, they're pirates, so they got to kind of, you know, make up their own kind of stuff, because they're, you know, they're on a shoestring budget, right?
Yeah. Well, they were able-bodied ones. The pig leg ones, they made them go through the tunnel.
Right, right. So that causes the pirates to overwhelm the crew and disarm them. A Chivatine, which is the species name of the wolf-looking guy named Brutus, enters a ship by a docking tube and informs Captain Silvo that the ship is secure.
He was like, you know, the dang it, what's the movie with the two brothers? Oh man, low budget, became like a cult following. Gosh dang it, the guy off Walking Dead. You know what I'm talking about? Daryl, that plays Daryl on The Walking Dead. What's that guy's name?
Daryl.
Anyway, I'll think of it. It's the Queenus, whatever, with the guns, where they're their brothers and they like pray with the rosary beads.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that one.
That's going to drive me nuts. Anyway, Brutus looks like their dad because he has like pistols everywhere. Like he had
all those guns. He's got like lots of guns, and he's got badges and things all over him.
Exactly. Yes.
So Silvio is pleased and proceeds towards the vault. After punching the defiant merchant captain, Silvio orders his crew to throw the captain out the airlock because, you know, they can't seem to get the vault open. He punches him several times and he says, "Hey, open it up." And the guy's like, "You know, there's nothing in there. We're just a merchant ship. What are you?" And then Silvo's like, "Hey, why do you have an airlock on it then? If it's you know, why do you have a lock on it? What do they call it?
Vault."
Yeah, but it's got some sort of special lock on it. And he's like, "Why is it magnetically locked or whatever? If you don't have anything on it."
Boondock Saints. That's the movie. Just came to me. Well, I looked it up, but
yeah, I don't think I've seen that one.
No way. Okay, well, that's a whole different conversation. But yeah. like it's a time seal lock or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like you see it. Yeah, whatever. And so since they can't get them to open it, they break out the lasers and start cutting through the vault door. Silvo promises that he will deliver hard credits to his crew because they're disgruntled about something or other. It's better pan time. Out, Silvo, or whatever they say.
Yeah, hard times.
But they finally get it open and they discover the vault is completely empty. Brutus enters the vault and finds one single credit on the floor. He condemns the captain for risking the lives of the pirates for a single measly credit. The pirates stage a mutiny and subdue Silvo while Brutus watches with a grin. Doesn't he kill him too?
Well, we're led to believe that's the case, but I have a theory. Do we want to talk about theories yet? Or do we
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, my theory is that Silvo is Jude Law.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Because we are kind of in the future when we catch up with the kids here.
Yeah, theory is that's Jude Law. That's just my theory.
Could be. You could be right. Makes sense. So, all right. So we catch up with our kids, Wim and Neil. Curly haired human boy named Wim plays with a Jedi and Sith action figures. His father, Wendell, reminds him to not be late for school. While Wim has cereal for breakfast, Wendell searches for his pass cards and tells his son that he will be home late from work for the next few days due to a supervisor review. Making him work too hard, man. Single father and doesn't have time for his kids.
Single dad, we just gotta just give him credits for lunch money. Jeez.
Right. He passes Wim several credits for school lunch money. After finding his pass card, Wendell departs for work and reminds his son not to be late for school. After playing with his toy starship, Wendell rushes to school past a two-legged labor droid pushing a lawnmower, which I thought was funny. That was, now we don't have to mow our yards anymore. We got a droid to do it for us.
Yep.
You got a visitor there.
Yeah. She sees something outside.
He also runs past an Ithorian woman named Mrs. Elik, who is walking a frog dog, running along the street. He meets with his friend Neil at the playground, and the two engage in a pretend lightsaber duel. Zoom, 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 zoom. Wim and Neil join up with a group of school children in the and boarding a tram. A girl plants chewing gum on the head of the RX series pilot droid who's driving the short bus, if you didn't notice that. Yeah. Short bus. RX series pilot droid. And the droid's like, "Hey, who did that?" And he's turning around looking and stuff.
Who did that? Just stop. Sit in your seat. Sit in your seat.
I'm going to get you for that. Stay in your seat. Yeah, it's kind of funny. So Wim and Neil sit at the back of the tram, and Neil's talking about mathematic equations while Wim is engrossed in reading a data pad about Jedi and Sith. Wim notices two girls riding a hovercraft sidecar that passes the tram they're on, and they go into the forest instead of staying on the road. He's like, "What? Oh, you can't go there.
That's a shortcut.
It's off limits and stuff." The nearby forest, Wim peers out through the back window as the tram descends down an underpass, which takes them to a crowded business district. The safety droids usher the children to the school building, and Wim sees a safety droid reprimanding two girls who have ridden their hover bike and sidecar. So the two girls get in trouble, and they have droids forcing them to go to school. Get there, get in school, go this way, kids, this way. Go to class, or you're gonna be tardy.
Bueller.
Exactly. During a dry class about computer algorithms, whim doodles, which, you know, poor Rick's being replaced by a droid up there on the chalkboard. Whim doodles Jedi on his screen when a supervisor named Undersecretary Farah enters the classroom.
That was a fancy etch-a-sketch. I'd love to have one that big.
That's a pretty big. I don't know if I've seen one that big either.
That's what she said.
All right. Farah briefs the children about tomorrow's upcoming career assessment. You know, they're gonna get tested, like they're gonna do their ASVAB test, but you know, worse.
Pretty much. Or worse, it sounds like.
Yeah, sounds like worse. Career assessment test, which she explains will set the course of their entire futures. Based on the test, they will be assigned a career path linked to their planet Atten's contribution to the Republic's good work, or great work, sorry, keeping the Republic peaceful and strong. Sounds like they're going to be building weapons and stuff to me.
Yeah.
When the teacher droid asks the pupils how they would like to contribute to the great work, a female Vazolian named Rona says she wants to be a senior statistical accountant. These kids are like 8 or 9 years old, right? They're not that old.
Yeah, I would say that's probably about their age.
Yeah, I don't. How can you know what you want to do at that age? But
this sounds like a foreign country, how they're planning, you know, kids' lives and careers for them.
Right. And the Ithorian says they want to be an analyst processing analyst, and that prompts a dark-skinned boy to complain that he wanted to be the analyst.
No fair.
Farah reassures him that they have a demand for analysts, and there'll be plenty of jobs for analysts. When Farah turns her attention to Wim, he says that his father is a system controller, but what he truly wants to do is help people. This prompts the teacher droid to say, "That's what safety droids are for."
What?
You can't be a droid, you weirdo. Farah encourages Wim to study hard and reassures him that there's a place for him in the great work. There's a place for everybody. Don't worry, you'll have a place.
For everyone. Even That's if it's right. Digging ditches and picking up trash. Right. We have a job.
Somebody's gotta teach the droids how to mow the yard.
Yeah, that's right.
After school, Wim and Neil discuss the upcoming test, and Neil is surprised that Wim is unaware of the test. Wim is disinterested in the test while Neil is nervous about failure. Neil confides on his feelings for the girl named Rona, who he admits he is too shy for her. When Neil questions Wim about the career ambitions to be a Jedi, Wim initially denies it and asks if he ever considered doing anything that exciting. Asks why he would consider doing anything that exciting. So, basically, Neil is saying, "Hey, you told the lady in the class that you wanted to be a Jedi," is basically what you said. He's like, "No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
I didn't say that.
No, I didn't. Okay, maybe I did.
Not literally, but yeah, you did.
Maybe I did." Meanwhile, the two girls, KB and Fern, ride their hover sidecar through the plaza and race down the underpass, speeding between trams. They reach the suburbs, but their hover bike breaks down. Uh-oh. Oh. Fern decides they should walk back. Meanwhile, Wim and Neil walk home together. Wim watches as Neil enters his family home where two parents are present. And he's like, "Oh, I only have one." And Wim walks back to his empty home, all sad and thinking of Jedi still.
Yep.
So KB and Fern are still looking at the bike. and KB starts to look at it and try to repair it, you know, see if it can be fixed real quick. And she says, well, we need a new power converter. Can't fix that.
We'll just go get one of those at the auto parts store.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was somebody that I read somewhere saying that this was supposed to be one of those, you know, things they sneak in there to point back to other stuff. Because if you remember in New Hope, Luke wanted to go to the spaceport and get a, he wanted to be with his friends, but he also wanted to get a power converter. He had several of the evaporators needed power converters replaced.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, hey, I need to go into town and get a power converter. And then he's like, I have plans with my friends. I don't want to go do that.
Yeah.
So they mention the power converter, and then some other children on hover bikes come by and make fun of their hover bike and reminds them of an upcoming race before speeding off. So this guy, Bonji Poffy, races bikes, and so does apparently Fern. Little offshoot, you know, back alley kind of thing, it sounds like. KB suggests postponing the race, but Fern says they will have to act tough towards the jerks. So we have to stand up to them and pretend like we're all cool. We just need to get that, you know, power converter thing.
Everything's good. We're good. We'll win.
KB is hesitant about fighting this Bonji, but Fern is determined to take part in the race. Before leaving, Fern reminds KB to keep an eye out for a new power converter. And they split up, I guess, go to their own houses. Fern leaves KB's garage and heads back to her luxurious family home. Inside the living room, she's met by a silver and blue servant droid. Where the droid refuses to lie about her absence, Fern sets a memory override. She actually reaches up to the droid and resets it or something, I don't know. When Fern sees her mother, Undersecretary Farah, Fern claims she was studying, which the droid supports because she reset it. Farah passes her daughter in this a school badge, which she dropped, that happens to reveal that she is the top of her class. And she's like, oh, Mom, I'm not really, you know, I just kind of, I'm only getting it because you're undersecretary probably or something.
She's a brainiac.
Seems like it, but she doesn't seem to be very engaged in class, does she?
She's rebellious.
Right. Meanwhile, Wim studies a data pad in his room when his father, Wendell, returns from work. Wendell asks his dad to quiz him on mathematical questions. When Wendell asks the basic five tables, a string of numbers, but he gets Wim gets the equation wrong. He says, "Hey, you're not really paying attention, are you? You're off in your own little world." So he sends Wim to bed. But Wim says, "Hey, can you read me a bedtime story?
Story like mommy did."
And Wendell declines the offer, saying that he is too busy, and suggests that Wim might be too old for story time. After his dad leaves, Wim gazes at some hanging toys and starts reading a story about a Jedi fighting a monster on his data pad. The camera shifts to a greenish, cloudy night sky with red lights and stars above. So they don't have, like, you know, blue sky, dark and stuff. They have a green cloud up there all the time. It's kind of weird.
It's the barrier.
Which we'll talk about. Yeah, the barrier. We'll talk about it in a minute some, too. So the next day, after, you know, everybody's slept some, Wim is late to catching his tram, you know, because his daddy's not there to remind him to not be late. He shouts at the tram and his friend Neil, and tells him he's going to be taking a shortcut. I'm taking a shortcut. And Neil rushes to the garage under his home and starts up his hover bike. After racing past Ms. Ick and her frog dog, Wim heads towards the barrier along the suburban highway. So the little barrier like we see on our streets, it's got a crash barrier or whatever you want to call those things. He lifts his bike over the barrier and races through the forest. Meanwhile, Neil waits impatiently for his friend, and Wim in the tram or the exam hall while teacher droid briefs the children about the exam rules. Neil asks the teacher droid about Wim's predicament, but the droid orders him to sit down and shut up. Well, he didn't say shut up.
Be quiet.
He didn't. He says be silent. Didn't say shut up. Silence the same thing. So while racing through the forest on his hover bike, Wim runs into several branches, shrubs, and causes him to drop his helmet. Oh no. Now he's foreshadowing he's gonna hit his head or something.
He can't drive, it's unsafe.
Yeah. He rides towards his
because his little bike has streamers on the handlebars. Remember that? Yeah. Did you catch that part? I was like,
"Yeah, I saw that too."
Okay, kid.
Well, I mean, he's 8 years old, so whatever.
Yeah.
7, 8 years old, whatever.
He's even train wheels.
Exactly. He rides towards the center of the city, but finds a ravine ahead, and he can't seem to cross it because, you know, he's got a hover bike and it's got to hover.
It can't hover
over empty space. He's going to have to jump it, yeah, or walk the bike down and walk the bike up.
He didn't learn how to ramp.
So Wims, he steps on the brakes and balances himself, but he loses his footing and falls down the incline into the ravine. He finds himself hemmed in the high cliffs and boulders with a bunch of tree roots and all kinds of stuff all over. It's, you know, just a trashy looking area. It looks like people are throwing their trash down there, and Wim calls for help, but a bat creature flies out behind him above his head. He tries to climb out of the ravine, but the soil is so loose that he just falls back down several times. He grabs a root and the root breaks off. He just falls down multiple times, basically giving up and saying, you know, hey, what's going on? And while he's sitting on the ground, looking around, trying to find a way to get up, he notices some metal embedded in the ravine wall, which turns out to be a hatch of some sort. He's like, ooh, it's a Jedi temple. Oh, he doesn't say that yet. That's what he thinks.
It's a secret entrance.
Before he can investigate any further, he is discovered by a safety droid who chastises him and says, hey, you're late for school. Wim agrees with the droid, but asks him, how do I get out of the ravine? You know, I can't get to school if I can't get out of the ravine. So then apparently the droid comes down and gets him, and we see Wim looks like he's sitting outside the principal's office. They call it a proctor's office. Same thing, I guess. Well, Wim reads through his story pad, he is joined by Fern, who is also in trouble.
He's about ready to get a proctor, all right.
Fern asks why he's outside the proctor's office. And Wim says he missed the test. When Wim asks Fern what she's done, she says something about the droids hate her riding her bike. Wim describes Fern's bike as wizard. And then Fern teases Wim about the proctor taking the last who missed the test to work in the mines and never be seen again. And I thought, I mean, I'm sure they didn't mean it this way, because One of my favorite movies is Ferris Bueller's Day Stay Off. And there's a scene in there where Ferris's sister is arrested for speeding because she's trying to race home in the car before Ferris. She gets her mom's there her mom's talking to the police officer. She's sitting on a bench. And one of the Sheens sits out there. Charlie sits out there. And so that scene right there reminded me of that because she's like, what are you here for? And he's like, what are you here for? And then they start, you know, kissing and stuff or whatever.
Actually, that is true. Yeah, I didn't think about that. But now that you mentioned that, yeah. And he's wearing his leather coat, just like Fern's got that leather coat, you know?
Exactly. And I've watched that movie too many times, so it really just stuck out to me. It was when I first saw that scene. I was like, oh, Ferris Bueller.
I wonder if that writer had anything to do with that movie, too.
Could be. I'd have to look him up, I guess, and see. When I do up the stuff for the website, maybe I'll check it out then and see.
Interesting.
So shortly after, Wim's father, Wendell, appears out of the proctor's office and scolds him for missing his exam. Wim explains that he found something in the woods. Wendell tells him that he is convinced the proctor will let his son retake the test with a 50-point penalty. So that means you have to pass every question right to pass the test. So 50 points, I don't know. Must be 75 more questions left.
Yeah.
Wendell tells him to drop his Jedi Temple nonsense in the woods and to focus on his studies. He promises to take him to school the following day and asks if he understands what's going on before he goes back to work. Because, you know, he's got that auditor thing going on.
Yep.
So he's got to get back to work.
Supervisor review.
That's it. After Wendell leaves, Fern asks where he encountered the Jedi Temple in the woods. Wim claims he was lying and starts to head home. Fern eyes him successfully. Meanwhile, Neil's three siblings, including Tulu, are watching a circus circus event on a hologram, which that is also a Easter egg too, because there's a Star Wars holiday special that's really old, 1978 or something like that, really old Star Wars special, where they have Chewbacca and his family, and his kids are watching a hologram of a circus, just like the one that we see in this show. Which it's almost exactly the same. But that's one of the things that people pointed out. So Fern is watching Wim, and Wim's going around looking through windows at Neil's house to try to find Neil. And he says, "Hey, Tula, where's Neil?" You know, at the window, he's like, "Where's Neil?" And so you can barely hear him or whatever. And the sister points, like you said, points upstairs. Upstairs. Wendell's like, okay. So he goes up, climbs up on the roof and finds a skylight. And he looks in there, and all of a sudden, whoa, Neil's naked in the pool, taking a bath.
Rub-a-dub-dub, scrub that tub.
Neil screamed, "What are you doing?"
No luck.
Wendell asks Neil if he has any tools. And so they meet up in the garage. Neil suggests informing the adults and the safety droids of what they're doing, you know, because he doesn't want to get in trouble. He's a good boy.
However,
Wim insists that this is an adventure they have been waiting for. Neil's reluctant and agrees to go anyway to help his friend on one condition, that they do not get in trouble with the grown-ups. No trouble, please. The two boys walk with their hover bikes and tools to the edge of the ravine as they prepare to ascend down the ravine, Neil suggests that they should study a little bit later so that they can make sure that he passed the test. Lacking climbing experience, the two just kind of roll down the hill and fall. The two boys found the buried hatch on the hill, and Neil thinks it's just junk before they get too much further. He's like, I want to go, you know, it's getting dark and, you know, I don't want to get in trouble. They hear some voices. There's some droids up there looking, for some sort of noise or disturbance. And the voices, see them and chastise them for breaching safety boundaries. As Wim has a crush on one of the girls. Who has Wim has a crush on? The boys reply that, he has a crush on Rona and is prompting the voice to cackle with laughter. Shortly later, KB emerges and apologizes, explaining that Fern made her pull the prank on them. So they pretended to be, droids being, making noises. So it was all in the background and they couldn't see anything until KB comes out and says, hey, that was me. I was just kidding. That was my, my Geordi visor made my voice change, you know. And Fern shows up with a shovel.
Uh-oh.
Shovel. She's going to beat him in the head with it.
In a deep ditch. Uh-oh.
And she's going to bury him. The two girls introduce themselves, with Fern insisting that the hatch is their find. I found it first. Wim and Neil try to argue, but reluctantly agree to dig as the girls' employees. So the girls are hiring them to dig because they want to be in charge. Fern tells the boys that the hatch does not lead to a Jedi temple, and she explains that the ravine is supposed to be a new neighborhood development during her grandpa's time, but claims the plan was abandoned after contaminated sewer station released poisonous gas and supposedly drove the residents mad. Fern teases the boys by claiming that the residents were locked inside the buried hatch, and the boys position their ears against the hatch to listen to see if they hear any weird, crazy, mad people inside.
Clanging.
Fern slams her shovel against the hatch several times, scaring them, and Wim convinces the girls to let the boys dig in return for the boys getting the right to excavation. Meanwhile, Wim's father, Wendell, returns home. Says, hey, Wim, where are you at? You're supposed to be here waiting for me, because you're not supposed to be going out and doing stuff. You're supposed to be studying. And the boys are still digging. Fern watches the boys digging, and KB thinks that Fern is being mean and taking advantage of the boys, and says that the boys found the dig first. Oh. Fern doesn't care and thinks that they found a power converter. They should at least find a power converter here inside this thing. KB hooks up a cable to the hatch her cyber augmentation, while Fern tells the boys to be quiet. Yeah, she finds a little panel and pulls the cover off and hooks herself up. This causes the hatch to fold open, releasing a cloud of dust. So we get a and a bunch of dust because it's been closed for so long. The four children approach the hatch with their torches, and they find a storage compartment laden with several crates. Sensing movement, the children hide their bikes and tools inside the hatch.
Poison sewer gas came out.
Yeah, that's what the dust was. Meanwhile, Wendell is searching for Wim in the forest for some reason. I don't know why he would go to the forest. He finds Wendell's helmet and calls out for his son and says, hey, Wim, where are you at? Hello. Inside the hatch, Fern teases Wim about being in trouble and for disobeying his dad's orders. Wim is unwilling to abandon his adventure and convinces the other children to accompany him in order to prove himself right, meaning it's a Jedi temple. Wim discovers a derelict droid with a missing eye.
It's kind of freaky.
Yeah. He initially mistakes it for a skeleton. It's not very put together all the way. It's just legs and whatever. A rodent comes out the eye and they're like, oh, they scared him. He's like, it's not supposed to be alive. And Neil jumps and pulls on a lever that closes the hatch. You know, he gets scared by the mouse thing and he grabs onto something and pulls it and it closes the hatch and they're trapped inside. They can't get the hatch back open. The latch doesn't seem to work or nothing. As they bang on the door, KB points out that the hatch won't open without power and suggests following the conduit to find a power source. As they continue deeper into the structure, Wim tells the children that the Jedi temples have many secret passages. Fern tells the others to ignore Wim, but don't touch anything. No one touch anything.
Woo!
KB leads them down another hatch while Wim and Fern bicker. Wim reluctantly follows the other children down into a tunnel as he's startled by his own reflection. He's like, oh, what is that? Oh, it's me. Okay, never mind. KB strikes an engine-shaped device, which causes circuits around the ship to glow up and then kind of go out real quick. They all come on for a second and then go off. Meanwhile, Wim realizes that he sees his reflection because he's inside of a starship cockpit, and that's the glass to look outside. He uses his walkie-talkie to inform Neil about this find. He's like, Neil. Fern warns him not to touch anything. Stop touching stuff. Explaining that KB has restarted the power so they can open the hatch and get home. Wim says okay, but is mesmerized by the glowing buttons, which cause the starship to start shifting and shaking. The children attempt to rush to the hedge where the skeletal droid begins charging up. And they're like, what? It's scary. It's not supposed to wake up. The children now reach the open hatch, only to find the ground around the starship moving and causing earth and vegetation to shake. So they're like, I don't know if we should go out there. The earth is falling apart and stuff. It's kind of scary. And as it begins to shake, the ship begins to rise off the ground. And more dirt and whatever falls off the ship. Wim and his friends shout and wave at Wendell because they see him up in the air now. Hey, Wendell, hey, Dad, come get me, save us. And the ship begins rotating and the kids retreat into the hatch, for safety. Wim struggles to hold on to the hatch and the others help him as the hatch closes. So he's outside and he's almost falls off the ship and he's holding on to the edge there trying to get in. And they finally bring him in. But the hatch closes after he's in. The engines tilt into position for takeoff. We see the ships morphing and changing shapes and whatever. And it starts to set fire to the trees and vegetation below. Wendell watches in shock as the ship ascends up into the clouds into the barrier. The children struggle with the controls and buttons, trying to figure out how to go back or turn it off or something. Click, 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 click. The ship takes them past the nebula cloud and into space. And they're like, ooh, what's that?
What are those?
Ooh. Never seen any of that. Stars. What? Those must be stars. And then suddenly the ship powers up even more and they start to go into hyperspace, and you see the stars start to go by like they do in Star Wars and stuff. Got the streams of stars going by, and that's when the credits roll. And we're like, what? That's a cliffhanger. It's a cliffhanger.
Where are they going?
Exactly.
What are they doing?
And the barrier. Let's read about the barrier here, what it says. The barrier was an atmospheric anomaly that surrounded the planet Aten. Starships were not permitted to pass through the barrier without authorization from the government. So it's basically it's basically a wall they put up to say, hey, you can't get in through the wall unless we tell you. So we've got an alarm on it, so you can't get over the edge.
Well, we'll find more about it, I think, in the next episode, because I want to talk about it a little bit more, but I don't want to say anything just yet.
Yeah, they talk about it just briefly too there too. So, well, that's the entire episode. What did you, like you said, it was kind of somewhat disappointing. I thought it was kind of setting a lot of things up, but it was they took their sweet time doing it. I thought it was a little slow.
Yeah, I don't know. It was okay.
I thought when it first started up, it was going to be kind of interesting, but then all of a sudden they went back to the suburbs, and I was like, oh, okay.
Suburbia is kind of odd if you think about Star Wars. That's what I think.
Yeah.
But we have to remember that, yeah, it's not geared for like our generational, you know, appeal per se for the Star Wars universe. But it was pretty good.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, it was. It's kind of like what we were saying a little bit ago. It was this. I think it's geared towards like the preteen crowd, the ones that are, what do they call them? Not preteens, tweens. Do they? They call them tweens. That's it. They call them tweens.
Tweens.
Tweakings.
Yeah. It was okay. I mean, I it has the potential. I think it's going to get a little bit more interesting. You know, and it has to introduce, so you're getting introduced to characters. I don't know, the setting's just, it's weird to me. You know, they're like kids growing up in suburbia, you know, when we know that all around Star Wars, there's like a lot of bloodshed and a lot of other stuff going on.
Right, they're all kind of isolated and stuff.
And this planet seems like planet Earth. You know, like what we're familiar with and normal, and you know,
everybody's going about their business.
Yeah. You know, like they're mowing their yard, they're mowing their lawn, and the lady's walking a dog, and they're going to school, and they're taking a career test. Like, that's not Star Wars to me, but okay, I get it. I understand.
What the other half does, I guess. So.
You know, so if it gets the new generation involved into it, and then they can channel into the other Star Wars type stuff, then more power to them.
Yeah, that's the weird part, because to your point in Star Wars, you know, the Empire went around during their rule and kidnapped all the kids and, you know, forced them to be stormtroopers as they grew up. They trained them to be stormtroopers.
Yeah.
They mind controlled them and stuff. But, so what we're going to do, since we didn't do it at the beginning, is we're going to do an unboxing real quick.
Woo!
Unboxing. Now we have a special treat. It's unboxings. Oh, look at that. It says Funko. That's the box that it came in. So I'm going to... This one doesn't require a thing because I've already taken it out of the box. It was a box in a box. Whoa. So here's the side. Oh.
Pre-unbox the boxing.
Right. Oh. There it is.
Woo! That's kind of scary.
He's got lightning coming out, and he's got the wrinkles and stuff.
He might want to go see a doctor. That looks like pink eye.
Yeah, a little bit. Emperor Palpatine. That's that side. This is 738 is the number. There's the side. So he's wearing his robe. So this is not long. This is probably sort of depicting the scene where Windu gets thrown out the window. Windu out the window. Because he's got that purple robe on, which is the council or whatever.
Yep.
It's just on the back. It just says Palpatine. It doesn't say no collection or nothing. It just says Palpatine.
That's weird.
Side view. You get to see his ear. There's actually an ear on there.
Yeah, I can see his crazy hair.
Right. And you can see kind of on his hand there, there's the Force lightnings coming out of one of his mm-hmm. hands.
Yep.
But that's Emperor Palpatine. Like I said, I think gets around the time when Windu goes out the door.
That's cool.
There's nothing on here just says exactly when it is, but I thought it was interesting. So that's so I got it. I will tell you that the bobbleheads for this show are out already, and we might be seeing those soon too.
Seriously, really? Wow, that was quick.
Yeah, they thought ahead and released them on time and stuff. Instead of waiting 3 months afterwards to release them. So that was unboxing.
Yay. Now we have a special treat.
Unboxing. Yay. That was pretty cool. So again, that was 738. And now we're going to do this. So again, with the feedback, we have the email address, feedback@kylejohansson.us. We have a link on our website that you can fill out there, and it'll go to us through email. We're on X/Twitter @super_duper_pod. We're on Blue Sky at Rebel Alliance Briefing Room, and we're on YouTube for both audio and video of this podcast. So, any last words, Rick? Something for people to think about? Nope, nothing to think about. It is kind of weird that this show's about children. So,
I don't know. We can talk about it in the next episode because it kind of picks up a little bit. But it's not what I thought. I guess I was expecting a little bit more action, but I think it's coming. Nice hand.
Let's hope so.
You're a hand model.
Yes.
Do you have an OnlyFans account?
No.
No, it's not what I thought, but I'm going to give it some time. Like, I'll give it another episode or two, and we'll go from there. I mean, I knew it was not necessarily an adult kind of, I don't know if I even want to say that, like an adult normal Star Wars thing, but still a little surprised, but we'll see. We'll see what everybody else has to say about it.
I don't know. I mean, if we get into pirates and stuff, it might be kind of, it might get a lot more interesting because, pirates don't have rules and stuff.
Arr, matey. I agree there.
Which is interesting thing that I didn't mention is when the robot starts talking, and he wakes up, he's got the pirate accent, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, exactly. He definitely has the pirate dialogue.
All right.
Maybe that's so why he's got he needs a patch for his one eye, though.
There you go. Except then the mouse can't get out.
Yeah, true, I guess.
I guess he just flip it open.
There you go. He does have a hat.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to do the outro, and we'll take a few second break and start the next one.
That's good. I got to get rid of some Dr. Pepper.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast. Please visit our website where you can play current and past episodes. That's https://rabr.kylejohansson.us. That's
our website.
rabr.kylejohansson.us. S. On the left-hand side is a navigation menu. You can use this to learn how to load the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast on your Android or Apple phone and tablet. And we have direct links to our podcast on Apple and Google Podcast. Please participate by connecting to our social media, answering questions of the week, or submitting feedback directly from the site. Again, all of these are available at the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room website at rabr.kaielejohansen.us. This podcast in no way is approved, sponsored, or owned by Lucasfilms Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. All opinions are solely owned by Kyle and or Scott, and in no way express the views or opinions of their past or present employers. Views and opinions are not supported or restricted by Lucasfilms Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or any or other use of this podcast and its affiliate sites
don't do it
without consent of Super Duper Podcast Network and its host is prohibited. I am Kyle John Johansson, and this is Andrew Scott Sutton. Say Rick, goodbye now.
And Rick's there too. Still haven't redone that yet. Maybe over the Christmas vacation that I have, I'll do it. Anyway, so this barcode is not malicious. It takes you to our website. But we'll see you there. And that's what we got for this episode. See ya.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.